Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and remember that this is your show. Remember, if you've got questions that you would like to ask, if there are certain sort of things that you'd like to hear a little bit more information about, feel free to give us a call at 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to that website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab, send us that question, send us the message, send us that thing you'd like to hear a little bit more about. We would love to hear from you. With me in studio this week, as always, ladies and gentlemen, is Andrew Rogers. Andrew, it was a rough weekend.
It was last weekend. A split weekend. There were still some good highlights.
Well, I mean, the Packers lost. The Packers lost. So that's a plus.
Yeah, the Broncos took care of our business.
The Broncos win. Yeah. So that's all right. And I'm sure Bronco fans are also okay that the Bears won because they beat the Raiders.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can't beat the Chiefs, you can beat the Raiders, and that makes Bronco fans happy.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of different pieces out there. You know, over the weekend, though, I heard a lot of coaches talking.
Yeah.
Did you notice that they talk about a lot of cliches?
Yeah, there's a lot of coach speak out there.
Just a little bit, you know, and you know, having been in that profession as well at the high school level, I have spoken to different local media at times.
Mm-hmm.
I've used the coach speak. I've talked about taking it one game at a time.
Yeah.
You know, you know, baseball is a wonderful game because you can always do something about yesterday, tomorrow. Those sorts of things until, of course, you get to the game sevens. Then you can't do anything about that tomorrow unless you win. But, you know, if you take the L, it's hard to come back from that after a game seven.
Yeah. You know, I deal with it every day. You know, writing news stories, there's always the cliches about, you know, please say there's no threat to the public and, you know, some of those more catchy, attention-grabbing lines that, you know, kind of become those commonplace lines that everyone just expects when you turn on, you know, the radio or TV and listen to or watch news.
Exactly. You know, there are actually a lot of those cliches that exist in the financial world as well. We have actually used some of them over the years here on the show a time or two. But we actually sent out about a week or so ago a little video for folks. It's mostly audio, so radio, it's going to work, that kind of talks about some of those cliches. In fact, the title of this audio clip is 16 Cliches in 60 Seconds, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Some of those cliches in this industry, not only what they are, but what they mean and what the reality is. You know, do those cliches really mean what we think they mean, and do they actually work? Because they're a cliche for a reason.
Yeah.
But that might be because they used to be the norm in the industry. So, folks, we've got a little audio clip here for you. It's about 60 seconds long. So take a listen, and then we will dive into these cliches right after this.
I like the music.
Very nice.
Buy the rumor and sell high, because there's no such thing as a free lunch. Prediction is difficult, but never catch a falling knife. Cut your losses. No one ever went broke taking profits. As Mark Twain said, October is a peculiarly dangerous month to speculate in stock. The others are July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February. So sell in May and go away.
bull markets climb a wall of worry, and bear markets decline on a slippery slope of hope. But remember, pigs get slaughtered, and everyone looks like a genius in a bull market. Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful, and just make sure you don't fight the tape. When the tide finally goes out, you'll find out who's been swimming without a bathing suit, and make sure you know where your money is at the closing bell. Confused? Give us a call, and maybe we can help.
So we've got a few cliches in
just
there.
A couple.
Just a couple. And you know, we may or may not get through all 16 on here. I do want to hit some of the good mm-hmm. ones, some of the big ones. And to actually get us started, I'm going to break the first one into two.
Okay.
Right? There's the buy the rumors and sell high.
Yeah.
Both cliches. Oftentimes we talk about buy low, sell high. And buy the rumor, that really means buy low, right? When you hear people talking about a particular investment, there's likely going to be some emotional purchase into whatever mm-hmm. that is. There might be a guy on a particular cable show that yells and screams and hits buzzers and stuff all the time when it comes to rumors.
Yeah.
So the old cliche is buy the rumor. Right? If somebody says, ooh, this is going to be coming up, this is going to be a good deal, that's the old cliche, right? Doesn't matter if it's a stock, a bond, a particular mutual fund, or some other asset out there that might be available. Because buying on the rumor, Andrew, is all about doing something that you go, ooh, if I get in at the right time, this could go to fill in the blank.
It's kind of that FOMO when, you know, we've seen, you know, very, very limited success with that. You know, your favorite run the past few years, you know, GameStop was a lot like that. It's just that talk and that hype train kind of kept going and going until it actually moved the market. But those are very, very few and far between.
Exactly. I actually had a conversation with someone earlier this week who bought on the rumor. We were discussing some of the assets that they owned, had bought on the rumor of, hey, if I put $1,200 into this, in a few years, once it takes off, I'll have millions. And that's one of those, well, there's a whole lot of sales that went into trying to get you into that particular item. Mm-hmm. My hope would be we can get you $1,200 back out.
Yeah.
Because that's not always the way it works, because rumors are, in fact, rumors for a reason.
Yeah.
Right? There's often no actual reason, no logic behind a lot of those rumors.
Yeah, and it's really where they try to play off of those emotions and, you know, whether it be excitement, you know, kind of that group mentality or even fear. And we still see that a lot now with a lot of that kind of fear-based marketing trying to kind of fuel up the rumor mirror, especially, I hate to say it and kind of turn the eye on us, but maybe on some talk radio and certain kind of maybe commodity investments really tend to lean that way.
Yes, yes, they do. I actually heard a commercial the other day, and it comes back on every couple, 3 years of investing in fine art.
Yeah.
Right? And you can make a 30% return, but what they fail to tell you is that this particular organization owns about 250 pieces of fine art, and in the last 5 years, they've sold 13. That's not a whole lot to, you know, kind of build your reputation on. And, oh, by the way, they take a 20% cut of any profit that you make.
Well, it sounds like they've got their business figured out.
They do. They do. They're getting other people to buy on the rumor.
Yeah.
The second half of that one, right, was to sell high.
Mm-hmm.
And while, yes, technically selling high is a cliche, it is how we make money in the investment world. You buy low and then you sell high. So you buy it at a price and sell it for a price that was more than you paid.
Yeah. So where does the cliche then separate from, you know, the good, you know, math part of that?
So the separation of cliche from reality here is that high and low are actually relative terms.
Wait a minute. There's not a defined, you know, there's not a line of delineation that says this officially means high?
Exactly. You know, I look at it like this. Every house I've ever bought,
mm-hmm.
I had a house back in Wheaton, had one in West Chicago, one all the way up in Monument. I had one down into town. Now I'm back up on the north end. Every house I've ever purchased in my life, I bought at the high point in that house's sales history.
Yeah.
But that was my own personal low price getting into that house.
Mm-hmm.
I waited and sold it later for more than I paid, thus hitting the new high point in that house.
Yeah, but you weren't buying it there.
No.
You were selling high.
I was selling high, but somebody else was technically buying at their low point.
Yeah.
Because it is, in fact, all relative. And that's one of those things, oftentimes when I'm talking with clients and they get worried about things going on in the market, mm-hmm. and they worry about that, oh my goodness, I can't be buying in now because the market is an all-time high. And while that might be true, we also need to look at that to say, I don't know when it's coming back down. I don't know if the down is going to go below what this particular item's low ever was. The price may come back in a little while, and we can call that being on sale at that point. But the reality of it is, when we buy into whatever it is that we're investing into, that is our low.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying not to sell under what we paid for it.
Yeah, it's all based off of that perspective as well. And that kind of goes to another cliche that I know is further down on the list, but if we jump to this a little bit, it kind of really fits in perfectly with it. The idea of selling high, but then you also have that cliche that, you know, only pigs get slaughtered. So if
yes.
you're really, you know, just waiting, you know, for, hey, you know, it was high tomorrow, but it'll be higher the next day. If you're always kind of chasing that higher, that's eventually where you end up finding out where that real low is.
Yeah, exactly here. And I know you didn't grow up as a farm kid like I did,
mm-hmm.
In there, but I don't know if I've ever fully disclosed this part on the show. When I was younger, we had pigs.
Okay.
As I was growing up. And when I was home, because we had them basically high school, college, when I was home, it was my job to go feed them in the mornings, and pigs eat a lot. I don't know if you may or may not be aware of that part.
I've heard that rumor.
And because they eat a lot, that term pigs get slaughtered is actually more of a metaphor than a cliche, but it's a metaphor that kind of describes that those who assume too much risk to quickly generate
okay.
some great big short-term gains. That's what the pigs get slaughtered piece actually means in there. And the reality is that risk is kind of on that spectrum in here, right? The folks that eat so much so fast, get really big, and they're the ones that die, right? They are the companies that grow really big really fast. If we think back to the dot-com world,
mm-hmm.
right, in that 98, 99, 2000, 1 and 2, they got really big really fast and then totally fell off the planet. When we want to think about risk here as that spectrum, I oftentimes will tell folks, let's kind of lay that out coast to coast.
Yeah.
Right? California to Virginia. And if we're going west to east on this, this is where that risk falls in the spectrum. California, right? San Diego, that's like having cash. Little to no risk mm-hmm. outside of actual inflation. That's taking the money, put in the coffee can, bury it in the backyard. Hopefully the worms don't eat it, and you still have that stack of money. That's San Diego. You're going east, you get to, say, Vegas, right? Not all that far away from the cash side. And even though Vegas is pretty high risk on the gambling side of life, we're just taking the road trip here.
Yeah.
So that's the short and ultra-short duration kind of bonds. Just a little more risk than the cash side of things.
Well, traditionally. We know the whole bond market's been upside down lately.
Very true. Very true. But yes, in that traditional sense, less risk. We keep going through Vegas. We go across Nevada and Utah and make it even into the Front Range in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are more of your high-grade corporate bonds. Again, these are bonds put out by companies. They've borrowed the money. They're paying it back over 5, 10, 20, 30 years at a particular interest rate. And the reason they're high grade is because these are companies with very good cash flow.
Yeah.
Likely, they're paying back all of these bonds here. We keep going toward the east. We get to Kansas City, right? Those are some of your dividend-paying stocks. We start to cross over a little bit from that bond world to the stock world. dividend payers, not looking at a lot of growth, not a lot of risk on the growth side. These are the very steady performers. Dave Ramsey would call those the growth and income variety. You go across Missouri, or as the appropriate pronunciation is, Missouri. As a kid from Illinois, I think I can say that. And you get to St. Louis. Those are more your high-yield bonds, which actually act, even though they are bonds, a lot more like equities and growth stocks. You keep going east, get maybe out toward Nashville. Those are your large growth companies. Again, looking at growing, not so much paying the dividend. You make it even further east, out towards Charlotte. Those are your tech companies. Those are taking on even more risk. And we make it all the way out to Norfolk, to the Virginia Beach part of the world. Those are things like your crypto, your penny stocks, your very high-risk sorts of things.
Yeah.
So coast to coast, the further away you are from the East Coast, in theory, the less risk there is. But there's return involved with that as well. The ones who are trying to eat and get fat really quick can have some problems.
Okay.
So, and that that actually kind of works into that that cliche that was there in that clip right before it, where it said bull markets climb a wall of worry, and bear markets decline on the slippery slope of hope.
Okay.
And if you have paid attention to virtually any financial discussion on the major cable networks, really in the last 5-6 years, we've seen a bull market. We've seen a growth market, but everybody's wondering, when's it going to stop? Oh my goodness, it can't continue like this. It's never done this before. How is it? Oh my goodness, it's all going to fall apart. That's the wall of worry that a bull market, that a market that's going up, has a tendency to have to deal with, right? There are folks out there who are the naysayers, if you will. The folks who are always worried about, oh my goodness, it's going to collapse, right? It's the glass half empty kind of folks. And the flip side of that is that talking about bear markets declining on a slippery slope of hope, those are the optimists. Well, it's going down, but it's going to come back up. It's never gone to zero. In the long run, it's always going to be A, B, C, and, you know, you just throw stuff out there. The whole phrase itself actually came from a gentleman by the name of Robert Prechter, and really he was talking more about the bear market in particular because it's that prevailing thought that even as stock prices are falling, there's still hope there could be a rally. Mm-hmm. And you even see this if you're just watching on a single day. You watch a channel on a single day from bell to bell, right, from opening bell to closing bell, and you just watch what's going on that channel, and you pay attention to what the commentators are saying.
Okay.
Because if it's a day where things are going down, and they're going to talk, oh, my goodness, this is crazy. We don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, there's still an hour left in the trading day, and it could get better. It could be really, really good. And oftentimes in that last hour, sometimes there's a big flurry of movement one direction or the other. Sometimes there's nothing. And there's not really any rhyme or reason behind
that. Yeah, I was about to say, what would cause that?
yes.
Perfect.
There's no discernible rhyme or reason, quite frankly, behind about 90% of what we see on a particular day. And that's where we'll actually pick up with that next cliche, the one from Mark Twain, after we get through this break. Because while there may not be discernible movements and reason in a particular day, when we're looking at things over the course of time, we can get a lot closer to making some good, insightful decisions in there. So with that as the teaser, folks, we are going to take a break today on Money Matters. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial. Rick Stevens in studio with Andrew Rogers. We are talking about all those different cliches out there, Andrew. And one of my favorites actually comes from a fellow who's not so much known for the cliche as much as his writing over the years. And that's Mark Twain, Mr. Samuel Clemens out there. But one of my favorite financial cliches is where he has said, October is a particularly dangerous month in which to speculate in stocks. And others include July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February. Now, if I count correctly, that's all 12.
Yeah.
And you know, he's right that speculating or investing, as we oftentimes call it today, in the stock market, it does come with that hope of gain and that risk of loss, right?
Yeah.
It's particularly dangerous to speculate or to invest in stocks. But if we think about this in the long run, not just today or this week or this month or quite frankly, even this year, we can learn a little bit, understand a little bit more about those ups and downs, because there will be both. There's never been only one. The stock market doesn't only go up. It also doesn't only go down.
So you're saying it's a cyclical environment.
I'm saying that you are learning well. That's what I'm saying here.
I mean, really, yeah, because you're always going to have the ups and downs. You're going to have that. It's an indicator of a healthy market. And I guess if you really wanted to put that, you know, in perspective as far as whether, well, some place is a dangerous time or not, I guess the worst day to actually do any investment is tomorrow, because that tomorrow will never actually come through.
Exactly. There are way too many times that we're going to wait for this, we're going to wait for that. Well, I need to see this and I need to see that. And quite frankly, there have been many times over the years when I have had clients who have said, well, I need to wait for fill in the blank. And then the blank came in. And I said, okay, this is what we're waiting for. Well, I'm not quite ready yet. Okay. Well, you told me to tell you when this happened. This is happening. Do you want to move? And the answer sometimes has been, no, I don't want to do that yet because it might XYZ. And again, we come back to that FOMO, either the fear of missing out part, or, you know, I missed out on the low, or, wow, it's going up, but I don't want to buy it yet because it might come back down so I can buy it again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes it doesn't come back down to where it was today. I had that conversation actually earlier this year with a client who specifically wanted to buy Tesla.
Yeah.
And this was early in the year when Tesla was actually, for a few days, trading in the low three-digit numbers, in that 108, 109, 110. And he wanted to wait for it to come down into the 90s, and it never did. And we had to actually buy it in the 130s. We bought it $20 higher than it was because he wanted to see if it would go $20 lower. So sometimes you miss out on things like that rather than saying, hey, let's just do this now. Right now is usually a good time given the right sets of information in that series. And one of those pieces at that point in time said, hey, you really want to be in the electric vehicle world. You want to have ownership in there. Given all of my research, these are our best options at this point. This is where I think things are going to happen. Now, the RBG, the Rick's Best Guess, is not always correct. But there are certain things that I can look at and say, hey, from an economic perspective, these are kind of underpriced right now because it fell apart over here.
Yeah.
And that's one of those pieces that, well, you kind of have to think about in some of those parts, which actually leads us to that that next little cliche in there, which is sell in May and go away.
Yeah. Now, I like the back half of that.
The back half of that.
Yeah.
The fun part of this is it doesn't actually mean don't ever put your money back in. the sell in May and go away is actually a May through October, right? It really says, hey, May 1st, sell off all your holdings. At the end of October, October 31st, November 1st, buy everything back again. It's that thought that there is a six-month cycle that through the summer, nothing really happens in markets that's going to be of any consequence. And once the school year is back in and the harvest is done, because quite frankly, this cliche goes back literally over 100 years.
It's almost like the stock market was based off of, you know, the old commodity trading and back when you were having to wait on harvest and when you had a crop come in.
Exactly. And that's why this has been that cliche for literally decades. Going into, I think we can kind of even say centuries at this point. So here are those historical numbers, okay? Because I'm a numbers guy. I like to look at numbers. If I take the last 40 years, which I think is a pretty good swath of markets, month by month, if you're holding in January through the end of April, right? January, in a traditional January month, you're up 0.82%. February, up 0.29. March, up 0.96. April, up 1.51. And then you sell it, right? You're following this in this information. You sell it in May and leave. And you miss May, which is traditionally up 0.97%. Almost a full percent in May. You miss June, which is typically pretty flat, 0.02. You miss July, up 0.79%. You missed August, which actually, historically, over the last 40 years, is a down month. Negative 0.15%. 0.15% in August, historically. September is a little bigger. Oftentimes, historically speaking, negative 0.7%. But the month of October is a positive 0.92%. Then you come back, right? November 1 we buy, so we can hold November, December of the year. November, generally speaking, up 1.48, December up 1.11. So if you perfectly followed that, you sold April 30th every year, you bought back November 1st. Over the last 40 years, your annual return on the investment would average 6.17%. But Andrew, if you held on to that investment the entire year, you end up with 8.02%. Now, I'm going to do more than just that 40-year spread.
Okay.
Let's take a look at this year.
Okay.
Let's take a look at 2023. If we use that philosophy in the markets this year, held January 1 through the end of April, sold May 1st, we would be up 8.61% on the year.
Okay.
Coming into the recording of the show, had you held the whole year, you would be up 11.23%. Now, I got to tell you, again, full disclosure, I went to a small country school in southern Illinois. My graduating class was 34 people. But the math I learned back there that still sticks with me to this day says that if I look at our 40-year number, 8.02 is a bigger number than 6.17.
Yeah.
And if I look at just this year, 11.23 is bigger than 8.61.
And it's hard, you know, when we talk about it that way, though, still, because then you are dealing with, you know, these percentages and points. But I think, again, you have the mathematical skills that you actually kind of broke it down into what that would look like real dollars-wise, because I think that really illustrates that point even better. And again, I also am a, you know, product of public schools, but I still know what one number is higher than another.
Yeah, and I'm sure you had very good teachers helping you learn this over the years.
Yeah.
So let's take $5,000, and let's take that 40-year number, okay? $5,000. Let's say we sold May 1st every year. We bought it back November 1st. And we got those typical numbers month over month. In 40 years, that $5,000 becomes $62,000, which is, you know, not a small piece of money.
No.
But if we held it the entire 40 years, we didn't do the sell in May and go away, in those 40 years, we end up with just a little over $132,000.
And that's kind of, you know, taking another cliche into it, because it's not like you're actually moving or doing anything else. This is kind of Ron Popeeling it. This is set it and forget it.
Yes, exactly. If you just put it in, that's, again, one of my favorite all-time Dave Ramsey lines is buy a good growth stock mutual fund and forget that you own it.
Mm-hmm.
And really what you're doing is you're putting that money away, saying, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm not going to worry about it for the next X number of years. You actually do even better in that, right? And even though it's just that small percentage in any given year, over time, it does, in fact, truly add up to those big dollars, because the last time I checked, 132 is a little more than double of 63.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
I mean, you know, again, product of Rampart High School out here, so go Rams. But yeah, that kind of seems to track.
Yes. Yes, it does. One last cliche here before we head into that final break. And again, this is one of my favorite ones out of there, out of that little clip. Everyone looks like a genius in a bull market.
Yeah.
And really what that means is, hey, when markets are going up, it's easy to make money, right? It's easy to feel good about that. But ultimately what we've got to do is think about the long-term picture here, right? Those long-term ups and downs, the 5 and 10 year averages, because those are much better than just looking and basing a decision on a single year's return. Okay. We saw in markets an incredible bull run from 2010 through 2021. So here are three different funds in that time frame.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with this, the S&P 500, okay, because that's what we're going to measure with here. In 2013, the S&P 500 did 33.26%. The average large cap growth fund, and that's what I'm going to look at here, did 33.92. So the average large cap growth did a little bit better than the market as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
There is a particular fund from a company out there that did 33.8. So kind of right in line with average.
Yeah.
But above what the market did. There's another one that did 37.11 and a third one that did 48.02. So one did just under average, one did just over, and one did well over average. I'm going to move it to the following year, 2014. 2014, the S&P did 14.66%. Your average large growth fund did 10% even.
Okay.
One of these funds did a 3.89, one did a 7.43, one did a 10.56. So one was slightly above average, but still trailing the S&P 500 as a whole. I'm going to bump over to 2020.
Okay.
S&P 500 in 2020, 37.24%. The average large growth fund, 35.86.
Okay.
So really good year in markets.
Almost similar.
Very. One of the funds, 44.57. That's well above average and definitely above the S&P. One of them, 74.79. Almost double what the S&P did. And the third one, Andrew, did 149%. It more than doubled in that year.
Okay.
It was basically four times what the S&P 500 did. That's not so bad.
No.
But this is where I want to get to. Because especially in that 2020, there are some numbers that looked really good on a couple of those. But those two funds that well outperformed the market in 2020, did you know they're 10 of the worst performing funds over the last 10 years? The 10-year average on the S&P 500 is 12.55.
Yeah.
10-year average on a just a large growth stock mutual fund, 11.12. One of these funds in the last 10 years has done 6.4. The other one has done 7.22. They are, statistically speaking, the two worst performing ones in that 10-year time frame. And yet there are some years they outperformed the market.
Yeah.
Just because the market is up doesn't necessarily mean that this one particular investment is the best option.
Yeah, because when the market's up and when we have those periods, everyone, again, like the cliche said, everyone can look like a genius when things are up. It's not hard to say, oh, I hear the market's up. Maybe I should go into the market. And all you have to know is that it's called the market. You put it in and you come out and it's good. But over that 10-year, that's where you really have to have a little bit more strategy and not just saying, hey, I'm going to trust the market.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, the two on the low end, right, 6.4 over 10 years, 7.2 over 10 years. Your top performing fund in that 10-year period, 17.58. 17.5, more than double of what these two did in any given average, quote-unquote, year along the way.
But even that one, there are still years where, even though they have a good track record, there's still some years where they either right on par with an average growth or maybe even underperformed the S&P. So even the ones that typically get it right most of the time, it's just most of the time because there are still other times where they may be looking in a different direction and then underperform.
Exactly. Exactly. So again, it's easy to make money when markets are headed up, right? Everybody looks like a genius in that bull market. Ultimately, what you want to do is you want to have those folks that you are talking with, that are advising you, that are helping you, not just in the growth cycle, but also in that contraction cycle as well. Well, folks, we are up against that next break in today's show. When we come back, we're going to finish with a few cliches that we may have actually used on this show a time or two.
Okay.
So stick around. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break right here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial. Rick Stevens in studio with Andrew Rogers. You know, Andrew, I have more than once just wanted to do like an entire day only speaking in cliches.
Well, I can help you with that. I think we do a lot of that here on the radio side.
You know, maybe a time or two. I actually thought once about teaching, you know, my classes one day that way, just to see if anybody would notice, either doing it all in cliche or all in song lyrics.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of song lyrics we can put out there as well. But there is one particular investor, very well known, perhaps called the Oracle of Omaha, a time or two, Warren Buffett. He seems to know, over the course of his life, a little bit, just a little bit, about the investing side of life.
Yeah.
He may run Berkshire Hathaway pretty well.
Still doesn't know how to spell knowledge, but he can run an investment fund pretty well.
But, you know, most of the folks in Nebraska, I think, believe the N on the side of that helmet stands for knowledge.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of Nebraska fans in the family, and I routinely remind them of that concept. But one of the things that, and I know we have used this on the show more than once. In fact, we may have even used it last week when Kyle was in.
I think we've been using it weekly almost.
And that's exactly, and that's one of those things from Buffett where he says, "Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful." And what he really means in that is that if the consensus, if everybody is saying and believing one thing, there's likely to be a more rational decision in the opposite direction. It's kind of like George Costanza, right? It's do the opposite. Whatever everybody thinks, do the opposite.
Yeah.
And the reason is that it's not just our emotions that drive markets. Markets drive emotion.
Yeah.
When you see markets coming down and everybody's, oh my goodness, how far will it go? As someone who buys and invests on a regular basis, the answer is probably not far enough down. It's not going to come deeply enough on sale.
Yeah. But that's also showing that, hey, this first sale sign is out, so why not get in here? And even if you take a little bit, you're still getting in lower than it was the day before or the day before that or week before. And you're still, as you mentioned, getting in at your low so that you can eventually sell it at your high.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I often tell folks when markets are pulling back, right? That's that terminology again, when the value is going down, it's like things being on sale. Mm-hmm. And again, we've just got a full disclosure show today, okay. Andrew. I am a pin snob. For years,
yeah.
Years, I have only used the Pilot G2 pin.
Okay.
Now I remember when they used to be packaged, two in a package, you bought them for $2.58. The price has gone up. It's higher than $2.58 now.
Inflation.
Ah, I'm telling you. Of course, you know, this is also me having used them for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, back in my day, when we walked to school in our bare feet uphill both ways in the snow, right? Say, so, hey, everybody, an old man's talking. Really, what I'm doing is saying, you know what? I like that Pilot G2. And at the normal price, I'll buy that two-pack. But you know what I really, really like?
The back-to-school sales when you can get a whole box
on
sale?
Oh, yeah. When you can go into the Staples or the other office supply type stores and get that box of 25 of them for just about what you would normally pay for 10.
Yeah.
Back-to-school sales are awesome because you know what? It's still the same good Pilot G2 pen. I just got more of them at a lower price.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, that's sort of that concept, right? Fearful when others are greedy, right? People are driving that price up because they're greedy. They're buying, 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 buying. It's a good time to sell because rationally the price is up. I'm going to sell high. Now when they're fearful and the price is going down, 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 I'm going to buy because I'm coming in low. I'm buying it on sale at that point.
Yeah, and I know this could be a whole nother show, but knowing that, you know, him saying to be, you know, fearful when others are greedy, greedy when others are fearful, that's just code for, hey, take the emotion out of it.
Yes.
And just be logical. But how do you do that? Knowing that really everything in us, our views on money, everything, it's so tied to those emotions. It's one of the harder things to actually be able to separate, but he's saying to do that.
You know, I'm going to bring this actually back to the sports world because
okay.
Nothing in our show ever comes back to the sports world.
No, not us.
There's a reason that football coaches script the first X number of plays, and that's because they're saying, hey, this is going to be our game plan. We'll make an adjustment later if we need to.
Unless another team goes up, you know, 35-0 in the first half, you just keep giving, you know, their wide receiver 5-7 yards pad the entire game.
Well, you know, not that anybody would have ever done that recently. But the idea being that, you know what, on first down, on the first three series, here's what we're going to do the first time mm-hmm. we've got a first down, the next time we got it, the third time we've got it. Here's what we're doing on second and long versus second and short. It's taking the emotion out of it. It's saying, you know what, we've made it to third and two, but I'm not actually going to do the tush push this time. We're actually going to try to, you know, maybe throw a screen out in the flat or, you know, run a jet sweep instead of just trying to get 85 guys shoving my quarterback through the middle of the line.
Or line up like you're going to and get the other guys so edgy they'll jump off, give you that free first down.
Exactly. Exactly. So that, when we're talking about it from the investing side, it's really about putting that game plan together, knowing what it is we're going to do and when we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get there, we don't deviate from the plan because it's very easy to go, oh, but the crowd wants this. Should we give the crowd this? if you deviate from the plan, oftentimes you will actually get hurt.
Yeah.
Right? If you're a hitter and you're thinking, okay, I'm coming up and I'm going to look for something, you know, off speed, middle of the plate, away, but the crowd is roaring because that's the tying run on second base and I really want to hit a home run and I'm just going to go up there and swing wildly, I've just blown up my entire game plan.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to stick with the plan because there's a reason it's the plan. It's because it works. And it works because we're not doing it heat of the moment. We are merely going, this is the plan we put in place. No, it may not go as, I may not get all of the up, or I may not have bought at the exact perfect low price, but I bought at what is going to be a low price for me, and I've sold at what's going to be a high price that I'm going to get.
Yeah.
Just and, taking that emotion.
And you are in, yeah, you might cut out, you know, the top high, but you're also cutting out that low, and you're still getting a good average and the, you know, the heart of that growth.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's really what we want folks to be doing, to be out there and not let the emotion, because we have that deep emotional tie to our money,
mm-hmm.
but not let that emotion dictate what ought to be logical, rational decisions in that whole thing.
It's almost like we have to have a switch where when we start investing and you put that money into the markets and go from your money to an investment, you think about it more theoretical gains and not what you actually have, because you don't have any of that until you cash out.
Exactly. I'm still working on how to explain this to the non-boomers and the non-Gen Xers, because for the boomers and Gen Xers, I just tell them we've got to be like Spock, right? We've got to be a Vulcan. We've got to have 100% logic. We really can't deal with anything on the emotional side. But the millennials, Andrew, I struggle with, because the Spock that you guys know from the new movies is not the Leonard Nimoy kind of a Spock.
Wait, they had another movie?
Oh, boy, did they ever. Boy, did they ever. I want to jump to the next cliche.
Okay.
Because, again, we've used this one on here before. It's another one that I know I have heard Warren Buffett say more than once, and that's when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without a bathing suit.
Okay.
And no, it has nothing to do with going to the beach.
Or the temperature of the water.
Or the temperature of the water. What it really has to do is when the economic conditions change.
Mm-hmm.
And for 10 years, we didn't really see them change. We saw 10 years of a bull market. When bad things happen economically and things start to fall apart, we actually see what companies have been doing the right thing and who are going to be able to weather that storm, and which ones, quite frankly, are going to go away.
Yeah.
Oftentimes we think about this as companies that are too over-leveraged, right? They've borrowed too much money. They borrowed it on the thought that there was going to be this huge constant increase in revenue, and all of a sudden that revenue went away. And so did the value of that company, because we were running it purely mm-hmm. on debt. This, quite frankly, is the entire concept of what Dave Ramsey teaches.
Yeah.
Right? The idea that you want to do things the right way so that even in those hard, difficult economic times, you can still weather that storm. You don't get yourself upside down, as we have heard, or underwater, if you will, having owed more money than your home is worth,
mm-hmm.
or than your car is worth, or we're owing more money than we even make in any given year. We are getting rid of that stuff. We are doing things in such a way to weather the bad storms out there. The other way to actually take this is, again, when there's a growth market going on, everybody has a growth risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But when that market is pulling back, nobody wants to lose anything. We're no longer having that growth level of risk. It's, oh no, now I'm probably not even conservative growth, but more like the income conservative income, because I don't want it to go down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to deal with a down. I only want this to go up. So again, especially, and I know I talk to so many people who who had this happen in the 2007, 8, 9 world that were right there closing in on retirement within the next 1, 2, 3 years, but they still had an aggressive growth portfolio because from 2003 through 2007 were great years in the market and we're all about the growth. Well, we need to understand why there are risk levels at certain times and why they make sense for certain people at certain times in particular accounts because, quite frankly, even at that level, every account that you have ought to have a different risk tolerance on it based on what you want to do with the money.
Yeah.
And that's one of those pieces where, you know, especially when we just went through 2022, that was a very difficult year in the market. Markets were down not just on the equity side, but on the bond side, double digits. Having that right balance in there really helps weather that storm.
Yeah. And it goes back to, you know, the other cliche that we talked about earlier about everybody being a genius in a, you know, good market. When things are going good, anyone could find that hit and keep going. But that's when, you know, you see that first sign of, you know, some turmoil, when things start getting bad, then you really see who actually has that plan, who can have that foresight, and who knows how to weather those economic changes and can still make those good, solid investments instead of just either cutting and running or just continuing to hold on until you're, you know, the yodeler on the Price is Right, falling off the cliff completely.
Exactly. Exactly. That actually kind of brings us into that next cliche, right? To know where your money is at the closing bell. The closing bell, right? That's what indicates the end of the trading day on Wall Street. And the whole meaning behind this is when it's all said and done, you need to know where your money is invested and why, right? And the reality of it is, no, as the investor, you don't need to know every single detail of every single piece associated with the company per se. And especially if you're holding mutual funds, you don't need to know every single piece about the 80, 150, 300 sometimes names that that mutual fund holds, but you do need to know why you are in that particular investment.
Yeah, and just as importantly, you need to know where you're going as well too, so you can say, hey, you know, my end date is still plenty out there. We're good in this high growth fund. But hey, you know what? All of a sudden, I'm rounding that last corner. I'm coming in to home. Do we need to be adjusting the type of fund I am? And again, that risk tolerance to figure out exactly how we're going to be able to land the ship.
Yep, exactly. And that's one of those things, especially when you're working with an advisor, because if we're in the middle of a really good growth cycle, a lot of folks don't like to pull back that risk level, especially, hey, I've only got a couple more years. I really need this to grow. I get that, but you've also only got a couple more years, and you might not want this to lose either.
Yeah, I mean, you could keep going and realize what you have, or you could double down and lose everything.
Yeah, and that's one of those conversations that I have with folks oftentimes is something to the effect of, if we're going to move out of a growth portfolio, which is about 80% equity, and we're going to move to conservative growth, which is about 60% equity, it's not would you rather get this amount of growth or that amount of growth. It's generally, would you rather get a smaller amount of growth or a bigger potential loss in there? And again, we've talked about this before. People feel a loss twice as much as they feel a gain.
Yeah.
So a 5% down feels worse than how good a 10% up does.
Yeah, and I think people always get caught up on that gain side that, you know, hey, I've only got a couple more years left, so I got to really try to get more and more grow, kind of hit that big gain. But they don't think they also want to look at, hey, I'm opening myself up for twice as much loss, which means I got to go back to punching the time clock that much more, those few more years to make up for it, instead of just readjusting and realizing that, hey, there's something bigger on the other side.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's always where working with that advisor, being able to pull the emotion out of it, because again, hitting that retirement date, very emotional sort of thing out there in our lives. We want to pull the emotion out. We want to look at the logic, the rational side of it, make those decisions that way, because what I would rather have folks do is become a little less aggressive a couple of years out than have to work an extra 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, at some point, we're just tired of working.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Work is kind of work. It's not, you know, easy.
Yeah.
All the time. Now, there are some jobs that may not be as strenuous physically, but there is a mental drain regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah, and it's still living on somebody else's agenda. No matter what, you're still doing whatever the step ahead of you wants you to do instead of being able to retire and being on either your schedule or, more likely or not, your partner's schedule.
Yeah, well, you know, as a married man, I can say that, yes, it will ultimately, when I hit the retirement world, it's going to be making sure that my schedule works for my wife and what she needs me to be doing, because I might have my ideas, but she has her schedule.
Yeah.
And sometimes my ideas fit into that schedule.
Yeah, you have your ideas, but she's got her ideas.
Yes, yes. And as I oftentimes will counsel young couples, there are two votes in this relationship, and sir, yours probably isn't going to count.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there from a little experience. Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this week on Money Matters. If you've got questions, maybe you've heard some of those cliches, you don't understand how it applies in your world, you want to sit down, we are happy to do that. I was just telling somebody the other day, it does not take a big pile of money. I know there are people out there, you got to have a big pile of money before I want to talk. It doesn't take a big pile of money. And the reason it doesn't is because it's your money. And believe it or not, I care because your money matters. So if you've got those questions, give me a call, 719-500-8700. We will be back again next week. And yeah, we are going to continue talking about your money, because even though it's cliche, Andrew,
your money matters.
See you next week, everybody.